Ryersonian this week. It's Friday, February 15th. I'm Melissa Bernardo.
And I'm Anthony Manrique. This is our last day of school before reading week.
And this also happens to be my last day co-hosting the show. My time at the Ryersonian has come to an end since I will be going off to my internship, but I just wanted to say that it's been a slice and I've had a lot of fun hosting this podcast. And yeah, but Anthony's going to do a great job after reading week hosting.
Yeah. But you're off to better things, aren't you? Are you nervous?
A little bit, but I'm also excited.
That's good. Well, Melissa, I hope you really have the best time at your internship and best of luck to whatever you do there. And always keep in touch with our podcast and we'll see you around.
I will for sure be listening to it while I'm there. Thank you.
So yesterday was Valentine's Day. So any good stories to share, Melissa?
Well, all I did yesterday was pretty much order a pizza. Me and my boyfriend just watched a rom-com, and then that was pretty much it. But what I actually wanted to talk about was the night before Valentine's Day, I went looking for conversation hearts. You know, those little candy hearts, like they're full of sugar. Like that's all, I'm pretty sure that's the only ingredient.
Yeah, with the little messages.
Yeah, so like some of the messages would be like, bae, or too cute, or like things like that. I love those. Like I always get them every Valentine's Day, and there was none. And then I found out that basically the company that produced these candy hearts, Necco, they went bankrupt. And then another company, Spanglers, took over. But the problem was they took over so late into the year that they didn't have time to actually make more. So I thought, oh my gosh, we're never going to see these again. But apparently they will be making
them. That's such bad timing, though.
Yes, I know. But apparently they'll be making them for next year. So it's all good. I thought there might be like some knockoff brands making their own versions, but I saw none. But anyway, how was your Valentine's Day?
I went speed dating.
Oh, wow.
This is the first. Yeah, that's me getting out of my comfort zone.
So how was it? And what even, like, how much time did you have with each person?
So I had, like, 2 minutes with each person. And then, so the registration process was you give your email to the people organizing the event. And then they give you numbers. I mean, they give you a number for yourself because, like, I think there was like 30 people in the room, 30 or 40 people, and they each had their own numbers, 1 to 40. And you have your own number, and then you put down your email beside that number. And then once you get into the speed dating portion, you talk to the person, and then you get their numbers to see who you match the most with during the speed dating portion. And then they'll email you your matches.
Oh, that's cool. How it's worked. Well, when it comes to love, people express themselves in many different ways. Maybe it's through speed dating, or it can be through words, actions, art, or even fashion. Manny Jassal graduated from Ryerson's fashion program in 2013. She now has her own luxury evening and bridal wear brand. Jassal spoke to us earlier this week about her new collection, With Love, that launched at this year's Toronto Fashion Week.
I knew that I wanted it to be a more feminine collection, so I was sort of figuring out what to be inspired by. But then I went fabric shopping, and when I went fabric shopping, I saw like this one fabric that I fell in love with. It's actually the one that I use in the collection. It comes in pink and white. It's a smaller floral detailing, and from that I sort of got inspired. I created the sketches, I created the different styles, and then we put it into production and created the samples for the show and the shoot.
Jassal says part of the inspiration for this collection comes from the first feeling of falling in love and having a crush. And if you would like to see photos of Jassal's new collection, you can check out our website at ryersonian.ca.
Melissa, I have a question for you.
Okay, what is it?
Do you speak the language of romance?
I sure don't, Anthony. And by the language of romance, I'm assuming you mean French.
Yes, I am.
So I actually took French all 4 years of high school, but I feel like it was really hard coming into Ryerson with all the other course options out there. I didn't really get a chance to continue it, and I kind of regret that now. I wish I continued it because I totally lost it. If somebody started speaking to me in French right now, I would have no idea what they were saying. I might catch on to some words, but I wouldn't be able to like form a sentence and reply back to them.
Yeah, I took French for like a year back in high school.
When it was required to.
When it was required to. But yeah, I never really got around to it. I was more inclined to learn Spanish for me. Because, I don't know. I felt like it was more romantic kind of sound of language. It's more intense, you know. But French for me, it's a little bit confusing, especially with all the numbers. Like,
yeah.
From 20 onwards, it was so weird. It's like 2021 for 41, right?
Wow. Yeah, it gets a little confusing, but I think it's always good to learn a new language.
But anyways, I'm bringing this up because I know you and Maggie went out to see what's happening with the French university that's being planned right here in Toronto.
Yes, Maggie, who actually speaks French, and myself went to investigate the future of l'Université de l'Ontario Français since the Ford government's education funding cuts. Plus, we also explored the city's Francophone community.
It's kind of like French people in this city are just hiding because no one ever speaks French.
Mon nom est Nicolas Couillard, puis je suis dans le club de français de Ryerson.
French is Nicolas Couillard's first language. His dad's side of his family is Québécois. He communicates exclusively in French with his grand-mère, and he went to a French school, up until he enrolled at Ryerson for mechanical engineering.
School is always in French, and then I came here, stopped speaking French, and for some reason I find it almost difficult to transition into it, which is weird because it's my first language.
Couillard says he didn't understand anything in his first year math courses since he had always studied the terms in French. But he didn't have many options. If there had been an option to study engineering in French, he says he definitely would have considered it. The Université de l'Ontario Français is slated to open in downtown Toronto in 2020. The province passed Bill 104, the Université de l'Ontario Français Act, in 2015. The law acknowledges gaps in post-secondary education for Francophones in Ontario. The French language university would be the first of its kind in southern Ontario. It would cater to more than 600,000 people who speak French in the province.
Basically, students should have a choice. You know, they have a choice to study in French or to study in English. What has happened is that there are some bilingual university. Again, York, University of Ottawa has provided some programs in French, but it's not all of the program. And they remain English-speaking university with French program, which is not the same as having a French language university.
That was Frédéric Dimanche. He's a professor and the director of hospitality and tourism management at Ryerson. He's also on the board of governors for l'Université de l'Ontario Français. According to a report published by the board in 2017, the price tag to establish the university is $83.5 million. The university expected that sum to be funded by the government, but last fall, the Progressive Conservatives revoked funding for the project. Dimanche says planning for the university hasn't been abandoned, but it's unlikely it'll open as planned in 2020. The federal government pledged $1.9 million for the university last month.
Our ambition is to create some kind of a Francophone hub in Toronto. You know, you hear about a Chinatown, a Koreatown, a Little Italy, and so there are pockets of culture, basically, that, you know, that exist in Toronto, but you couldn't find in Toronto a so-called French town.
I rarely hear French on the street, on the subway, or anywhere else downtown. So I went to visit one place where French is always guaranteed. Alliance Française Toronto is a chapter of the worldwide organization that runs French events and offers French classes for youth. The organization promotes French as a second language and Francophone culture.
Je m'appelle Jean Grenier-Godard. Je suis le directeur de l'Alliance française depuis le mois de septembre 2017.
Jean Grenier-Godard is the director of the Toronto chapter of Alliance française. He moved to Toronto from France a year and a half ago. Grenier-Godard speaks very little English. contrary to the average Torontonian, he says he lives his life 95% in French.
Donc forcément, oui, les gens sont fiers
d'être francophones. So of course, yes, people are proud to be francophone. But it must be said that, and everyone understands, in Toronto, you have to speak English. Grenier-Godard says there are two types of francophones in Toronto, those who are franco-ontariens and immigrants from French-speaking countries. He says a French language university in downtown Toronto would provide a hub for all of them.
L'université est englobée dans quelque chose de beaucoup plus global.
A university is so much more than just a university.
Carrefour francophone où il y aurait l'université mais il y aurait aussi d'autres.
There'll be other institutions surrounding it.
Et là effectivement,
so, yes,
on peut imaginer
one can imagine that it will become a place in Toronto where francophones can express themselves.
Un pôle francophone qui va s'exprimer.
The exact location for the school is still a secret. It won't be announced until closer to the opening date. In the meantime, Ryerson students are finding their own spaces to practice French.
I almost feel like not having been able to speak French at all, there are whole parts of me that are just kind of like sitting there inside and just have no idea where to go because they have no one to talk to. And it's like, it's almost lonely.
That's why Couillard joined Le Club Français du Ryerson.
I personally think the French university is a good idea, especially because for those students who took French immersion, the people that Maggie spoke to, especially Nicholas, he said that he kind of lost it. Like, he doesn't get a chance to speak it. So I feel like if those students who were able to learn in French all throughout high school had a chance to also learn certain subjects in French in university, then I think that's a great idea because they get to continue on their studies while speaking the language that they learned all throughout their younger years.
And I think that's the only thing that Toronto is missing out on is a French community here in Toronto.
Yeah, like a hub.
The one guy said, like, there's a little Italy, there's a Chinatown, there's a Korea town, but there's no specifically French town here in Toronto. So maybe like having a French university here would help make a small French community, and maybe it'll flourish into something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a good addition for Toronto, especially considering our diverse communities out here.
Yeah, so we'll see where this goes. Hopefully we'll be seeing a French university here soon.
Hey, Melissa, one more question for you.
Oh my goodness, so many questions today.
It's not like a speed dating thing. Anyways, do you play video games?
Not really. I don't really play video games. I feel like when I was younger, I would kind of play more like on my DS Lite, you know, those really? Little games. But I never play like PlayStation. I did play Wii, however, like Wii Tennis. I feel like I'm pretty good at
that.
Well,
whenever you play video games, do you get really competitive?
Yes, but it actually depends on who I'm playing. If I'm playing against my brother, I can get super competitive because I always want to win.
Really? Well, have you heard of esports?
Well, just recently I heard that esports was a thing, but I have no idea what it's about.
So Ryerson actually has an esports team. Esports is essentially competitive video gaming. It's not a recreational club, it's more of an athletics team. So in this piece, producer Jasmine Bala explores the role women have in this male-dominated world of esports. Fight.
League of Legends. My favorite game at the moment. I've been playing it for 8 years now, and it's been my favorite game for 8 years. That's a long time, but I've been playing games for even longer, pretty much my whole life. I have my brother to thank for that.
Hearthstone,
CSGO,
Overwatch,
League of Legends,
Rainbow Six, Pokemon, Rocket League.
When I first came to Ryerson University, I was introduced to the school's esports scene. Ryerson Esports is a mixed-gender athletic club. It was created in 2016. 3 years later, it has 9 teams for 9 different games. The games are League of Legends, Overwatch, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, Rocket League, Hearthstone, Fortnite, Super Smash Bros., Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege, and Dota 2. I never joined the club, but I had a few male friends who joined. After talking to them, I quickly discovered that many of the teams had no woman on them. And most girls in the club don't play. They take on roles as managers. Until now.
We do have like a few females on our executive team. Our League of Legends manager and our newly formed Rainbow Six team's manager is also a female.
That's the new president of Ryerson Esports, Siobhan Liu. She's the first ever female president of the club.
Our social media is being run by like two females as well. There's just like some girls who are in the rest of the club, but they do like auxiliary roles or they're part of events team or stuff like that.
Across all of Ryerson Esports' teams for all 9 games, only one player is female. And she didn't even want to play on the team at first.
So what I told Siobhan, like the president of the Ryerson Esports Club, was that I do play the game, like I'm knowledgeable in the game, but I prefer to be at a manager standpoint, like overhead, just watching over everybody and making sure everything's being run properly. But if I were to play, I'd be okay with it.
That's Michelle Dervishi. She's the manager of Ryerson Esports' Rainbow Six team. She also plays on the team.
I was a bit nervous because, again, it is like a commitment having to do all this stuff. And at the time, I wasn't exactly, like, I was playing a lot of Rainbow Six Siege, but I was also playing other games. So if you're doing something like this, you do have to put more energy into the one game, right?
After talking to Michelle, I was interested in finding out if the other girls in the club felt the same way. So I talked to Judy Ngo. She manages the League of Legends team.
I realize I'm not the greatest playing. I don't have, I guess, the qualified skills or consistent skill to be an actual player. And then for me, I know when it comes to like my own friend group, I'm kind of like more like the mother figure where I'm kind of like making sure all my friends are okay or we're not lost. That really played into a reason why I decided to become a manager.
Michelle and Judy both play the games they manage. So the problem isn't that girls aren't playing games. In fact, a survey done by the Entertainment Software Association of Canada in 2016 shows that 49% of Canadian gamers are female. Michelle is the only girl in the entire esports club who plays competitively on a team. Female managers like Judy play for fun on the side. So why aren't more women trying out to play on competitive teams? Do we approach games differently than men do? I spoke to Victoria MacArthur to find out. She's a professor at Carleton University who has done research on video games and is a gamer herself.
I don't think it's necessarily fair to classify it as, you know, the relationship women have versus men. Because I think women essentially come to gaming the same way men do. Like, you know, it's a leisure activity. It's something that we engage in as consumers. The problem, I think, is just that gender stereotyping is really prevalent. And so like, even I find my 6-year-old, fortunately because of her upbringing, she's not willing to let go of video games, even though a lot of the people in our school tell her, like, video games are not for girls. And so I think it's sort of problematized by larger sort of social ideologies around gender. But women who play games are not any different from men who play games. We get the same kinds of benefits from them. They're leisure activities. They're ways for us to explore new worlds. We play with identity online. We're competitive. We're skilled gamers. So we get the same out of gaming as men do.
But we still aren't seeing many women playing on teams. I asked Michelle what the difference is when she plays competitively on a team versus casually.
Casual is like, it is exactly what it sounds like. It's for casual players or people just practicing stuff, right? So it's a lot more laid back. In ranked, it's like a whole different like environment, right? Because you're playing to win. So if you're playing poorly, then obviously they're going to get upset because there's stuff at stake.
So maybe women don't play competitively because they simply prefer playing casually for fun. I know that's why I don't like playing competitively.
A lot of it has to do with like toxicity in general because the games that we play are really toxic. But I really think it just dwindles down to interest at the end of the day because some girls are probably more focused on like something else that they want to do and they just don't have the time to sink into playing these video games. It's not about like, you know, sexism or things like that.
For Judy, Michelle, and Siobhan, it doesn't matter what your gender is.
Who cares, like, if you're a guy or if you're a girl or if you're, like, something else? You just try out, and if you are good, then you make the team, and if you don't, well, that's just kind
of
it.
We don't need that idea of being a gamer girl. We're just gamers. We're just here to have fun. We're just here to win.
But at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't really matter to me. Like, even when I'm playing online, if there's a girl, I don't treat them any different. If it's a guy, I don't treat them any different. It's all the same. Like, we're all just trying to get to one point, just better, right?
We're just gamers.
The president of Ryerson Esports is a woman. The manager of the League of Legends team is a woman. a player on Ryerson's Rainbow Six team, is a woman. Women playing video games isn't a big deal, nor should it be. I've been playing League of Legends for 8 years now, and I won't be stopping anytime soon.
And we're back. Hope you guys enjoyed Jasmine's piece. What do you think, Melissa?
Yeah, I think this piece was really interesting. I just remember when I was younger playing video games, not often, but when I was in that situation where my brother or our friends would play video games, the majority of them were guys. And I just feel like they assumed I'd never wanted to play. And because of that, I just never played. And I think there's always these stereotypes that women aren't allowed to play video games or that they're not going to be good at them.
But it's also, I feel like that video games, like even back then, like from the first video games that were released, I think they were marketed specifically for boys, not really necessarily for young little girls, because little girls had their, you know, Barbie dolls or whatever and all that stuff. So I think that kind of up to this day, it is still male dominated, but we can see more women coming out to be the face of esports. And like in terms of the whole video gaming industry, streamers, like people who play video games while streaming themselves over the internet, we see a lot of girls and women starting to do that now, and they actually make a lot of money doing it. So that's another interesting part of the video game industry.
For all of you listening, if you are interested in learning more about esports, especially at Ryerson, you can check out Jasmine's piece at ryersonian.ca.
Now it's time for our Community Corner segment. We'll be talking about a new podcast and a webcomic called Inappropriate Questions, hosted by Elena Hudgens-Lyle and Harvinder Wadhwa.
Elena is actually a Ryerson grad. She graduated from the RTA program in 2018. Elena joins us in the studio now with Maggie to tell us more about the podcast and what it's all about.
Elena, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I have been following you, I guess, launching the podcast for a little while now on Facebook. And I was so excited when I first got the chance to listen to it.
It's been a long time coming, so thank you for following.
So I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you is your show is called Inappropriate Questions. What is an inappropriate question?
So generally, it's a question that is, we try to keep it pretty broad. It's nagging or offensive or something that makes you feel really uncomfortable. It's often targeted at a marginalized group, comes from a misunderstanding about something to do with that group. It's these kind of frequently asked questions that people get a lot about their identities that makes them really uncomfortable, essentially. But we wanted to keep the kind of definition of an IQ, as we'd call it, pretty broad, because some of the questions we talk about, you know, have really loaded histories and are really, they pack a punch. There's so much to unpack, as Harv would say. Others, you know, sometimes, depending on context, they are inappropriate, sometimes they're not. So we wanted to keep that scope a bit broad for the podcast, so it can be a lot of things.
So we'll come back to Harv.
Yes.
Harv, for those listening, is one of the co-hosts.
Yes.
In addition to Lilina. So I guess for people who aren't avid listeners like myself, your website states that, you know, the podcast is all about asking the wrong questions the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you expand on how the episodes sort of unfold?
Yeah. So basically, we start off by introducing the question. We always have a main guest who has been asked this question before or something similar, and we kind of unpack the question with them. And then we also have an expert guest. Often these kind of definitions bleed together because the experts always have experience with the questions themselves as well, and a lot of our main guests are experts in their fields too. So often these people are activists or educators around the marginalized community we're talking about. So they will kind of bring some larger context and maybe historical background or some stats about, you know, how this community is perceived in our society. At the end, we kind of end with a discussion about, is this question inappropriate? Is there a way you can ask it that's maybe less inappropriate? Or should you just not ask it at all with the main guest? And that's kind of how we do things.
And so what questions so far have you asked?
So far, our first episode was, have you had the surgery, which gets asked to trans people about their bodies. Super invasive. Our second one was, what are you? Our producer, Sabrina, is mixed race and gets questions about her race and the way she looks all the time. So we wanted to, that was one that really was important to the team because it was so personal to her. So that was our second episode. And the third episode we've released is Can You Have Sex?, which gets asked to people with physical disabilities. So that one was, we were so out of our depth because no one on our team has a disability or has a lot of sex, to be honest. So we were like, whoa, this is a totally new world for us. But we got some really cool guests on that one. And I can tease that an episode I'm working on right now, our next episode is Why Don't You Drink?, about people drinking alcohol or not drinking alcohol.
Okay, cool. So I've noticed a lot of the episodes have themes about ableism, racism, transphobia. Now sort of bringing that more broader.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure everyone has some sort of connection to a lot of these questions, but some of the broader questions, like I feel like all of us have some sort of tie or relationship with alcohol or some sort of complexity there, right? And we're also going to be talking about kids and having kids or not having kids and sexism and stuff like that, which I feel like a lot of people of so many genders can connect to in a way. And again, some of these questions are more clearly offensive, like asking someone what are you is, there's a lot of history there, a lot to unpack again. We love that phrase so much we put it on a tote bag.
Which one, to unpack?
Yeah, so much to unpack, Harv says in the second episode, my co-host.
Ooh, I love a good pun.
Right? So yeah, we put exactly bags. We're so smart.
So I guess we should explain to people who Harv is.
Yeah, let's do
it. So on one of the first episodes, you mentioned that you know yourself and the other producers of the show really wanted to make sure that your dads listened.
Yes.
And that was really important when it came to making this podcast. So totally. Who is Harv?
Harv is my friend's dad, which is kind of hilarious. So we really, like you said, we say on the first episode that we wanted our dads to listen. So we wanted to give this demographic a voice on our podcast and also have questions asked to the guests that we would never think of. Because, you know, so in the episode, the first episode about transphobia and stuff, Harv asks, you know, what is a transgender? Which, you know, is, you know, the phrasing is definitely not something that people who know maybe a bit more about trans issues would use, you know? And our guest was really, like, respectful with that. But Harv was just coming from this place of curiosity and never having met a trans person before, right? So we wanted to make sure there was a voice for all the questions that we, you know, so-called woke millennials would never ask, right? We feel like we have a grip on some of these issues, but others, you know, Harv has way more of a grip on than I do, right? Anyway, so we wanted to cast a dad, and I put a call out on Facebook, and my friends make fun of me for this because I got the most response on Facebook out of all of us, and they're like, Elena, you have so many middle-aged dad friends.
I love that.
I don't really. It's wild that I got so much response. My friend Rim is one of my best friends. She came forward, was like, Elena, my dad's obsessed with podcasts. You have to audition him. So we had meetings with all of these dads, about six of them. He came in first. He immediately, like, made fun of our producer and said, oh, Sabrina's the mean one, right? And was roasting us the whole way through this interview. And at the end said, you're wasting your time. Don't do any of the other interviews. You know I'm it.
Amazing.
And he was.
And you know what? He asks questions because there's a lot of question asking in this podcast. It's all about questions, really.
Yeah.
And he asks a lot of questions with a lot of empathy. And I think that's sort of what I wanted to talk about next is this idea of empathy and how I think that that's what the podcast does, is it brings about empathy. It's all about empathy. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's really great to hear that because that's not a word we use to self-define a lot, but it's so important, right? I think that is at the core of everything we do, because if you can tap into that empathy in any of these scenarios, right, then you can understand where someone's coming from, even if you don't have their lived experience, and you can, you know, change your behavior to make that reflect the other person's humanity. You know, I think that's super important. So we don't just want someone who's going to ask all the questions that we won't. We want someone who's going to have that ethos of the podcast.
So you've got the millennial, and then you've got the middle-aged dad.
Yeah, he's in his 50s, I think, early 50s.
Okay, cool. And so what else, aside from empathy, do you hope that your listeners take away from the podcast?
I think it's kind of, there's this pairing that we're trying to get across between curiosity and respect. Because our whole thing is, you've probably heard of call-out culture recently. On the internet, if you say something offensive, you're likely to get dragged. And people will be like, oh my God, you're canceled, you suck, you're terrible. And that, I totally get where that comes from and where that anger comes from. It can be a lot, you know, and people sometimes are disincentivized from learning because people will drag them, you know? So we really want to encourage curiosity and be like, you know, understanding other people and wanting to understand other people is so important. Mm-hmm. And we do all come from different backgrounds and we do have different ideas about things, and that's important. But how can we do that in a way that's not making other people uncomfortable all the time just for being themselves? You know, how can we marry our curiosity with a drive to be sensitive to others? You know, Harv talks a lot about being PC and how people make that out to be a bad thing, but it's not. It really just comes from a wish to respect others.
Have you ever been asked an inappropriate question?
I feel like it's more like suggestions, and we get this from our guests too. It's looks, it's suggestions, it's implications more than anything. I'm non-binary and queer, and so sometimes there's this implication of like, why don't you just want to like have a boyfriend and settle down and be happy? And like, sometimes I do, but you know, my identity is bigger than a lot of people who know me can, you know, clamp down on. I question myself all the time. So sometimes people will make suggestions about like, why can't you just be like X? Why can't you fit into Xbox? Not the gaming console. Like, why can't you fit into this box of what society expects gender and sexuality to be? And my identity is really weird and I don't even understand it. So sometimes I feel like that's where I get some of that, is when I don't meet up, when I don't meet traditional expectations of me from family or other places. But to be honest, like, I have a ton of privilege. You know, as listeners might not know, I'm white. Like, my family immigrated here, but they were white immigrants who spoke English, right? Like, that's a huge amount of privilege. I, you know, in many ways, you know, I've had economic privilege. And that's what, you know, being on our team is really, is great, because we have a diverse amount of perspectives from, you know, we have a lot of people of color on our team. We have other women on our team. We have other queer people on our team. Yeah, and it's just important to not just have my perspective here. And of course, we have Harv. Mm-hmm. So it's great to get different perspectives. So yeah, I have been asked some inappropriate questions, but I think mostly I'm here to learn and to develop my empathy.
Well, thank you for sharing. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Not really. Maybe you should just plug everything.
Yes, definitely. Where can people find you?
You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. We're also at iqpodcast.com, which is where we'll upload all of our episodes. Also, we have a webcomic component that goes along with every episode, which is super awesome. We've commissioned artists from around the world to make companion pieces for the podcast episodes. Super fun. Check it out. And you can follow us online at IQ_podcast on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Elena.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for another episode of Ryersonian This Week.
If you have a question or comment about today's show, send us an email at sonian@ryerson.ca or reach out to us on social media at The Ryersonian.
Thanks for listening. I'll be back in the studio in 2 weeks with a new co-host. Have a good reading week, Ryerson.